Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
This is Dr. J. Buzz von Ornsteiner, forensic psychologist from Copycat Killers, Real Channel's true crime program about real murders inspired by movies. Be sure to subscribe to our series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find true crime TV series like this one on Reels Channel.
This program contains graphic violence. Viewer discretion is advised. The Sopranos, an HBO mega hit that dons a new era for the mafia genre.
The show was a huge success and watched by millions of viewers. Sadly, within those millions of viewers, there was one who thought that this might be a how-to commit murder and get away with it.
For Jason Bautista and his half-brother Matthew Montejo, The Sopranos holds the key to a better life.
Mom! Sit down! Jason!
Watching The Sopranos gave these brothers...
How does he get away with that?
...the strength that they needed to deal with their own problematic mother.
You're completely insane.
You cannot talk to your mother that way, Jason!
And ultimately, it was The Sopranos that gave them the blueprint.
Do you think you could ever kill someone?
Not really.
...to commit a crime that Tony Soprano might have done himself.
When these brothers follow in the footsteps of Tony Soprano, there's no limit to their bloodshed.
He was going to use the episode of The Sopranos to help him dismember the body and get rid of the body.
It's a copycat killing that hits close to home and tears one family completely apart.
He realized that eventually he would have to do something about it.
I want to kill her.
You can't just kill her.
And that something was going to be murder.
Hearing your voice. Somebody help me!
What stands out to me about this case is it's really difficult to paint a black and white villain. But here you have just a tragedy on every level.
David Chase's TV show, The Sopranos, debuts on HBO January of 1999 and is an instant success.
Tyler Richardson, film critic.
The Sopranos offered a window into the life, the everyday life of a mob boss that we hadn't been given in other television programs.
Tony Soprano, brilliantly played by the late James Gandolfini, is a high-ranking member of a New Jersey mafia family.
When you compare Tony Soprano to other crime bosses that we've seen in The Godfather and The Untouchables and Goodfellas, he just had this everyday man feel about him that I think allowed people to relate a little bit more.
The series pilot opens with Tony in a situation most mob bosses would avoid at all costs: therapy.
The sessions with Dr. Melfi really gave us a glimpse of his childhood, and we were able to get a better understanding of his relationship with his mother, Livia, and the toxicity of it.
During season one, Tony is forced to put his aging mother into a nursing home. It almost costs him his life.
Season one ends with a cliffhanger that involves Tony realizing that his mother has put a hit out on him and making the vow that he's gonna finish her first.
While audiences wait to see what will happen next on The Sopranos, two brothers in California struggle with their own mommy issues.
Frank Girardo, true crime author.
After seeing Tony get away with murder after murder after murder,
it's all a cover-up.
He begins to believe that maybe he can do it too.
Did you see that?
Tina Dermanbergen, author, Such Good Boys.
I think when he watched The Sopranos and he saw how Tony would behave in his life.
You cannot talk that way to your mother, Jason!
It sort of made him feel like, you know, you don't have to take it. And Jason says quite simply, we're going to have to take care of it, Soprano style.
By all accounts, 20-year-old Jason Bautista and his half-brother, 15-year-old Matthew, are good-hearted kids.
The boys actually were very, very close to each other, even though they weren't terribly the same in personality. Matthew, who was the baby, was more liked in school. He had an easier time of it in school, a little more social. Jason was the smarter of the two. He came off as a little know-it-all, a little arrogant, so it made school life a little more difficult for him.
While growing up in Southern California, Jason and Matthew are raised solely by their mother.
The family unit basically was Jane and her two sons. It was just the three of them.
But Jane wasn't always a single mother.
Jason's father was married to Jane, but was gone by the time that Jason was just a kid. Tragically, he committed suicide.
It's a tragedy that follows Jane throughout her life.
It was an incredibly painful moment for her. So struggling on her own, I can't imagine how she was coping. Things got a lot better for her once she found what would ultimately be her second child's father, Jose Montejo.
But Matthew's father doesn't stick around for long.
So Jane was really by herself for a while.
With little money and two boys to raise, Jane runs a strict household.
I can't imagine what life must have been like growing up under Jane. She would scream at the boys for nothing, particularly Jason.
You couldn't even iron your shirt!
Over fairly minor infractions.
Andre Spencer, former OCSD investigator, Homicide Department.
She was a very difficult person to live with.
To those who know her, it seems as if Jane suffers from an illness.
I know that you have been watching us.
Jane had undiagnosed mental condition. She would think people were after her. She would think she was being spied on.
What are they trying to cover up?
She would hallucinate.
Poisoning everything, causing the diseases that they say they're going to...
Jane progressed into hearing voices, thinking that people were talking to her through her vents, thinking that people were living in the bushes.
They've been spying on us.
You got 30 seconds to get you and your kids off my property before I call the cops, you understand?
With a mother like Jane, the brothers struggle emotionally.
The lifestyle made the boys a lot closer to each other.
They often lived out of their car. Maybe they would live in hotel rooms. Maybe they would have a house, but it would only be for a handful of weeks.
For Jason and Matthew, every fresh start eventually leads to another setback.
Matt looked up to Jason almost as a father figure, and Jason often felt that he had to protect Matthew from the insanity that they had to deal with day after day.
Can you believe that he had the nerve to kick us out of our home?
Ma, just forget about it.
As a means to escape their troubled home life, Jason and Matthew spend most of their days at school. Jason excels in his studies and hopes one day it will lead to a better life.
So out of high school, Jason got into Cal State San Bernardino. He began pursuing his career goal as a molecular biologist. He was able to get a job in the lab at the school.
But Jane's erratic behavior is starting to rub off on Matthew.
What are you thinking? Why are you getting into fights, huh? You have to straighten up. I'm trying to make sure we have a better life. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Jason knows he has to do something to protect his little brother. And one of America's most popular television shows will show him how.
One of the things that Jason's job in the biology lab allows him to do is watch a lot of television. He's able to access the shows that he can't watch at home because there's no cable, no internet.
Hey,
Jason.
It's here that Jason gets to be a brother instead of a father figure to Matthew.
What's up, Matt?
Away from the prying eye of their mother, Matthew and Jason binge-watch their new favorite TV series, The Sopranos.
Jason sees a lot of himself in Tony Soprano. Tony, the leader, the man that holds his family together despite all the odds. He sees the relationship that Tony has with his mom as being fractured and fraught with all sorts of anger.
Do you think you could ever kill someone?
Not really. Why?
I don't know. I think about it sometimes.
I think when he watched The Sopranos and he saw how Tony would behave in his life, it sort of made him feel like, you know, you don't have to take it.
One particular theme in season one resonates with Jason. When Tony's mother takes out a hit on his life, Tony doesn't waste any time getting even.
Tony goes to the hospital to kill his mom. He'd had enough of her craziness. He'd had enough of her control. That was the only way he was going to get out from under.
Like Tony Soprano, Jason yearns for a normal life without his mother. As he watches episode after episode, the seed is planted.
Yeah, that was crazy.
The two boys had watched this one particular episode and watched it multiple times, in fact, where Tony gets rid of one of his guys by killing him.
Oh, they're real cool.
And then he cuts off his hands and cuts off his head.
How does he get away with that?
I don't know.
I think this helped Jason eventually come up with a plan to maybe one day not have to deal with his mom.
But while Tony makes murder look easy, Jason will soon learn that being a soprano comes at a cost. The 1999 premiere of the hit television show The Sopranos introduces audiences to its most lovable bad guy, Tony Soprano.
In a typical episode of The Sopranos, we watch Tony cheat on his wife. We watch him violently assault someone and then generally share moments and dinner with his family.
But no matter what horrific things Tony has planned for those that get in his way, each week he's back in his therapist's office, trying not to spill too much information.
We find out that a lot of the stress and the situations that he's in are almost minuscule compared to the relationship that he has with his mother that's caused so much turmoil within him.
In California, 20-year-old Jason Bautista and his younger brother Matthew are having similar issues with their mother, Jane.
She was in the throes of a mental illness.
You've been spying on us!
And she needed help. And she never got it.
The more Jason suffers through his mother's mental illness, the closer he feels to his TV icon, Tony Soprano.
You can imagine that a kid like Jason seeing this wants to model that, wants to be that guy, wants to be strong, wants to be the breadwinner. And of course, as Jason sees Tony's life and his relationship with his mother, a lot of that reflects back into Jason's life and his own relationship with his mother.
Do you think you could ever kill someone?
Not really. Why?
I don't know. I think about it sometimes.
Despite their mother's illness, the boys try to live as normal a life as they can.
The best way you can describe Jason and Matthew's relationship with their mother, it's like walking on eggshells.
No, it does not exist.
They're worried about the thing that could tip her over the edge.
I think it was just paranoid schizophrenia. She was undiagnosed. That's the problem. Nobody ever tried to get her any help.
If I bring it to them, then they'll know. Then they'll know and you can see.
The lifestyle that the boys had to endure ultimately broke them over time. You know, these weren't kids who had, by any means, a happy-go-lucky childhood. And so living in that stressful environment constantly made them nervous wrecks. Particularly Jason.
I can't find it. Where did it go?
What are you looking for?
Jason, where is it? Where did it go? Jason, where did you put it?
They need to see it. They just need to be able to see it.
Mom, did you do something?
I don't think...
Don't touch me, Jason! Mom!
Talking to individuals about Jane, she was very emotional, abusive to the boys, and physical abuse was mentioned as well. Jane hit him with a hockey stick.
Never, ever do that! What are you thinking?
There's so much instability in this little family.
What is the matter with you?
There's no, lasting friendships. There's no lasting emotional ties to a community or a neighborhood. All they really have is Jason and Matt. That's all they have, just each other. And, you think about what kind of world that must be for these kids.
Get up! You get in that chair right now!
I was just trying to help.
Shut up and sit down, Jason!
Then, Jane's abusive behavior reaches a new low.
Everything is fine. Just go back to watching the television. Jason needs to learn a lesson.
There was a terrible incident where she got mad at Jason.
Is this what you want to happen to, Jason? Is it? Do you like this, Jason?
And tied him up to a chair with an electric cord.
That's not something that we do in this house, Jason! Pay attention!
There's an element of sympathy that is evoked when you see the way this woman treats her children. And you can't help but feel a little twinge of, what the heck? Why are you treating these kids like this?
Learn something that's useful for once.
Before long, Jason decides that if he wants to survive his mother's abuse, he needs to take a scene from his favorite TV character.
It'll all be okay.
Tony was going to end Livia's life by smothering her with a pillow.
It'll all be okay.
Light goes off in his head, and suddenly Jason realizes that in order to get on with his life and deal with the things that he has to deal with, he's got to kill his mom.
Jason comes to believe that a copycat crime might be his only chance at survival.
Jason saw a lot of himself in Tony Soprano. And watching the show, seeing Tony's psychologist tell him that, hey, your mom has a borderline narcissistic disorder, Jason had to have seen some of that in his own mother.
He begins to binge watch the show, looking for a way to get rid of his mother.
So he begins downloading The Sopranos. And as he's watching through these episodes, he comes across an episode that's considered one of the most violent episodes ever shown on TV. Ralphie Cifaretto and Tony Soprano have an argument over a racehorse. You could argue that Tony ends up killing Ralph because of self-defense. Jason tells Matt, hey, listen, I've got a plan to get rid of Mom, and here's how it's going to go down.
He mentioned that he would make it where she would come at him with a knife, and he would have to defend himself.
But Jason's copycat crime won't end there.
He copycatted the Sopranos episode by cutting the head and hands off the body to hide the identity.
It's Dr. J. Buzz von Ornsteiner. If you like what you're hearing, check out the Dark Crime Mysteries on your TV on Reels channel. There are the horrifying true stories of murderers like the Unabomber, who used the mail to claim his victims, and Ted Bundy, the serial killer who used his good looks to stalk unsuspecting women. Then check out the Reels medical mystery series, Autopsy, that reveals what really killed screen and music legends like Robin Williams, Lucille Ball, Prince, and Johnny Cash. You can find Reels on your TV at Reels.com. That's Reelz.com. Then check the top of the screen to find Reels in your area. By the end of its 6-season run, fans of the TV show The Sopranos witnessed the demise of a staggering 92 characters.
There's no show where everyone is in danger of being killed in any given episode. And that was part of the excitement of watching. You never knew who was going to go.
The show's creator, David Chase, based the character of Tony's mother, Livia, on his own abusive mom.
Livia has a narcissistic personality, and we watch as Tony battles with that and his feelings about his mother that
feel a lot like hatred.
It's a feeling 20-year-old Jason Bautista knows all too well.
I was just trying to help.
Shut up and sit down, Jason!
Jason and his younger brother Matthew have endured a lifetime of increasing abuse and instability at the hands of their mother, Jane.
Jane was not simply an abusive mother.
Pay attention! Learn something that's useful for once.
Jane was mentally ill.
It'll all be okay.
When they were with their mom, they were in constant fear that her psychosis would unravel.
It'll all be okay.
And this forced her kids to constantly be in fear of the things that they might have to deal with because of a mom that they didn't know what she was going to do next.
But after binge-watching The Sopranos, Jason thinks he has a solution to his problems.
Gotten better.
Practicing a lot more recently.
Jason so craved a normal life. He just wanted it so badly, and he saw what other people had. He saw his neighbors, he saw other kids at school, and he was frantic for it.
I don't like the way things have been going lately. I don't like the way she's talking to us, and I don't like the way she's been treating us. It's wrong. So wrong.
I know, but what are we gonna do about it?
After years of abuse, Jason comes up with an ominous ultimatum.
I want to kill her.
Jason. I hate Mom too, but we can't just kill her. We get caught.
We'd be smart about it. Like Tony Soprano. Right? There's no way they would find her.
I don't know.
Jason told him that if Jane ever started up an episode again and was going to uproot their family and move them, that he was going to kill her, he was going to strangle her, and they wouldn't have to deal with her anymore.
Jason hopes that he can entice his mother to attack him so that the murder looks like self-defense.
Matt, I love you. You're my brother. We got to stick together. All right, I'm doing this for us.
Okay.
Just a few months later, Jane's paranoia reaches a tipping point. For Jason, it's the final straw.
Get down, Jason! Get down!
Jane wants to move again.
Jason was so set in his way, in his established lifestyle, that he doesn't want to lose it all because of his crazy mother.
It's not safe anymore. We have got to move.
He endured physical and mental abuse his entire life, and then he snapped.
On January 14th, 2003, Jason goes to school just like any other day.
Death never ceases to faze me. People crying over dying.
Jason, for some reason, started singing this very odd, very dark song.
Never ceases to faze me. People crying over dying.
And he would say it over and over and over again. Friends of his said that they were kind of irritated.
Never ceases to faze me. Never ceases to faze me.
And talking with that Jason's friend, little did she know, with Jason saying those lyrics over and over again, what was really going to happen.
People crying over dying.
Turns out the name of the song was called Kill Your Parents.
That's how they control us. That's how they do it. We have to just figure it out and figure out where is.
After class, Jason returns home with one motive in his mind.
It's all a cover-up, and that is how they control us. You just have to figure it out. Keep putting it together.
Mom.
Jason! What are you doing? You scared the crap out of me!
He knows, because he's experienced it before, that the more he challenges her, and the more he gets under her skin, and the more he tells her how crazy she is, the more likely it is to set off a violent episode.
Jason, I saw them the other day. I saw them at the mailbox when I went out. He's responsible. I think he's the one.
You're out of your mind.
What? What did you say to me?
His challenging of his mother enrages her, and she comes after him. And he knows that this is that moment.
You heard me. You're completely insane.
Jason took this opportunity. He knew what was about to happen. He mentioned to Matthew to go in another room.
The hell I am. You cannot talk to your mother that way, Jason!
And why not?
With his younger brother, Matthew, out of harm's way, Jason incites a fight in hopes of claiming self-defense.
There's no way of knowing what Jason is thinking as this attack ensues.
Oh, Jason!
But one can surmise that all the fury, all the rage, all the pent-up anger of years of abuse has just come pouring out.
So,
before he knows it, Jason strangles his mother to death. Jason goes to console his brother.
It's okay. It's over.
Is she dead?
I had to.
When Matthew comes out and discovers his mother's lifeless body on the floor, he doesn't feel sadness. He's not overcome with tears. He doesn't in any way feel, well, anything. He says it was numb. It was almost like he was looking at a stranger.
The situation is eerily similar to a scene from The Sopranos.
Livia has a hard time keeping a caregiver due to mental illness. Tony resolves his mother's situation by committing her to a nursing home, which is against her will. Livia, of course, isn't happy about being forced into a nursing home, so she orders a hit on Tony.
But Tony vows to get his mother first.
And Tony responds to the hit being taken out on him by determining that he's going to be the one to kill his mother first.
Like Tony Soprano, Jason believed that after years of instability and abuse, his mother would one day cause him harm. So he wanted to get to Jane first.
I would imagine seeing something like that sticks in a young man's mind, especially since your mother's pretty similar to Livia.
We're not going to get in trouble, are we?
No. I'll take care of it.
But now Jason has a bigger problem.
Jason hoped he was going to be able to chalk this up to self-defense. But anybody who might have looked at Jane would have said, no way. This woman was too badly beaten to have had a demise that was the result of a self-defense. This was a straight-up homicide.
And Jason thinks he knows how to get away with murder.
And Jason says quite simply, we're going to have to take care of it, Soprano style.
The HBO television show The Sopranos hails as one of the greatest series of all time.
So throughout the show's run, it won so many awards that put it in a totally different stratosphere than most shows that we've seen. At one point, Rolling Stone even put it as the number one show in its top 100 shows of all time. That's monumental.
But for California college student Jason Bautista, The Sopranos is more than just a top-notch TV show.
Jason sees himself and Tony Soprano. Both of them have abusive mothers. Jason's decided he can't live with it anymore, and he doesn't want his little brother to have to deal with it anymore.
You're completely insane.
You can talk to your mother that way, Jason!
And he's going to take action.
Oh, Jason!
But when he gets his hands around the throat of his mother and takes her down to the ground, is not self-defense.
Now, Jason has a new problem to deal with.
Jason wanted it to look like it was self-defense.
We can't just kill her. We get caught.
Self-defense? You might go to jail for a couple of weeks. Jason realized he could handle a couple of weeks.
We'd be smart about it, like Tony Soprano.
You know, murder, you're going to go to jail for a long time, maybe even the rest of your life.
Jason knows he needs to hide his crime, so he takes a lesson from the king of cover-ups, Tony Soprano.
Jason says quite simply, we're going to have to take care of it, Soprano style. Soprano style was Jason's shorthand for, we're going to have to behead her. And they do that because in the show, they reason that makes it more difficult for any authorities who might discover a body to identify them. And Jason thinks, brilliant, perfect, that's what we're going to do.
But as Jason soon finds out, dismembering a body on television is nothing like beheading your own mother.
TV sanitizes the whole experience of murder. It's not as easy as baking a pie. And while the Sopranos episode is instructional, it doesn't tell you all the feelings and emotions that are going to happen following a murder as gruesome as Jane's murder.
Jason wraps his mother's hands and head in plastic, just like he has seen in The Sopranos.
You gotta figure that if he watched that episode of The Sopranos closely, that he knew that this was a two-part disposal process. That, you know, part one involved getting rid of the body. And part two involved getting rid of the head and the hands. He stores the bag containing his mother's head and her hands in the corner of a closet.
Jason and Matthew take the rest of their mother's remains to a construction site 1 hour away from their home.
You know, it's the middle of the night and it's dark. Everybody's asleep. Here's this dumpster. Jason tells Matt, this is the spot. Matt doesn't really know what the spot means, but he knows what his brother means. And they get out of the car with the intent of taking their mother's body, wrapped in a sleeping bag, and throwing her, or what's left of her, into this dumpster.
But just like an episode of The Sopranos, nothing goes off without a hitch.
What are you doing up there?
A security guard catches the brothers in the act.
Hey!
Come on, let's go.
What are you doing up there?
And when he confronts these two individuals about not dumping the trash and putting it back in their car and getting out of there.
Get back here!
Get in.
He saw a human foot come from a sleeping bag that they were carrying.
Get back here!
The security guard ends up taking down the license plate because he's not a cop, right? And even though he's armed that night, he's not looking for violence. That's really more for self-protection. But he doesn't want these guys to get away with it. Clearly, they have a body.
As Jason drives away from the construction site, his paranoia sets in.
At this point, obviously, things are not going smoothly for Jason, and by extension, Matthew. I mean, they can't get rid of the body. The head and hands are still in the closet. You've got a security guard who spotted them. And Jason probably knows at some point that he's written down that license plate number.
Jason's got to get rid of his mother's body, and he's running out of time.
They're driving on this highway out in the middle of nowhere, up in the mountains, and they come to a point where there's a really steep cliff.
It's like a scene taken straight out of The Sopranos.
I'll take care of it.
Jason gets out, takes the body, and heaves it off the side of the cliff. Which, by the way, is the exact same thing that happened to Ralphie Cifaretta in The Sopranos.
With his mother dead, Jason thinks that his life will finally be normal.
You don't have to worry about her anymore. I love you, man. Everything's gonna be okay.
The same cannot be said for Matthew.
Matt was not feeling the same sense of freedom that Jason was feeling. Matt was scared. He didn't know what to do. He needed his brother, but he loved his mom. His mom was dead, dumped off the side of the road. His family, is, for what it's worth, suddenly not really there anymore.
But the brother's terrible secret won't stay hidden for long.
So it's morning, commute hour. Jane's body has been dumped off the side of a road that's a pretty well-traveled corridor. A driver on the Ortega Highway spots something unusual just down the side of the road.
Detective Andre Spencer is one of the first officers to arrive at the scene.
I knew it was the body of a female, white female, red hair on her skin. But the head and hands were gone. We knew it was going to be a difficult case.
Police need to identify the victim if they want to solve the mystery.
I knew I needed assistance from the public and from local law enforcement. What we did was we sought help from the media.
And that's when a witness comes forward.
So I just have a few questions for you, and then you can go on with your day.
Okay.
So tell me about the boys last night.
If I saw them, I know I could pick them up. There were two young kids.
What are you two doing up there?
The smaller one was wearing a fuchsia-type shirt. Skinny kid. Short hair. Dark sweatpants. The taller one had on a shirt. Khakis.
Tell me again, what exactly did you see?
I saw him and his brother at the dumpster. Hey. They had a brown sleeping bag with something heavy inside. I swear, I saw part of a foot sticking out of it.
Officers get the license plate from the security guard and trace the car.
So once I got that license plate number, I immediately began to do research on that vehicle through the Department of Motor Vehicles. And that license plate number came back registered to Jane and Jason Bautista.
That's when things start to come together.
With that information, I also put up the DMV photos of those two individuals. And as soon as I saw the photo of Jane Bautista, I knew that was my victim.
The security guard from the construction site confirms the detective's suspicion.
I pulled the photo up of Jason Bautista and showed him that picture, and he immediately said that was the individual that was trying to dump a body in the dumpster at that construction site. I had a distinct feeling like the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, that I knew that was our suspect.
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
Police bring the brothers in for questioning.
Jason, you can sit right here. Matthew, you can sit over there.
But I want to sit with my brother.
No, it's okay.
Okay, Jason. I just have a few questions to ask you, and then you can be on your way, okay? Where were you last night?
Home.
And what were you doing?
Homework.
And where was your mother?
I don't know. I actually haven't seen her in a couple days.
So during our initial interview with Jason, and we're coming across as missing persons investigators, what I wanted to do was for him to just tell a story. And what Jason was doing was saying his mom's not missing and that she's away with her internet boyfriends.
But police aren't buying it.
But eventually I told him I didn't believe him, that I don't work missing persons, that I work homicide for the Sheriff's Department of Orange County. And we found a body after the Ortega Highway, and I believe it's his mom.
That's when Jason changes his story.
He wanted to come clean, and he came forward and told us what happened, claiming self-defense, And it was at this time he told us that the head and hands are still in the house, in a closet, in a canvas bag.
Police get a warrant to search Jason's home.
They found the head and hands in a canvas bag in the closet. The hands were together, next to her cheeks, and the initial look was like she was praying.
On January 24th, 2003, Jason and Matthew are arrested and charged with first-degree murder.
There's one thing Jason's really adamant about. He tells them, look, this was on me. My little brother had nothing to do with it. You guys can't touch him because he didn't know. This was Big Brother's crime.
Jason maintains that he was acting in self-defense. He thinks it's his ticket to get away with murder. But this family has a rat.
During this time, Jason yells out to his younger brother, do you know what they do to snitches in prison?
Throughout The Sopranos' six-season run, mob boss Tony Soprano is no stranger to snitches and double-crossers.
Tony was always on the verge of getting caught, but like any good TV action thriller, he was always one step ahead of the law.
The same cannot be said for college student Jason Bautista and his little brother Matthew. They have just been caught for killing their mother and are about to head to trial.
We represent Matthew Montejo. This is the worst case of juvenile injustice I have ever come across.
I represent Jason Bautista. We have pled not guilty to that charge.
Jason wanted to come forward and say what really happened. He claimed self-defense.
If the jury buys Jason's story of self-defense, the boys could get away with murder. But detectives get some timely information about this copycat killer.
Matthew and his attorneys came forward and said they wanted to talk to us and tell us the real story.
I want to kill her.
You can't just kill her.
And that's when we got the information about the planning. Jason had the conversation with Matthew a year prior that if his mom had another episode, he was going to kill her.
We'd be smart about it, like Tony Soprano.
And he was going to use the episode of The Sopranos to help him dismember the body.
With Matthew testifying against Jason at his trial, Jason doesn't stand a chance of convincing the jury that he killed his mother in self-defense.
So Jason took the stand. Jason thought he was always the smartest person in the room, but he wasn't this time.
One of the things that came out at trial and really struck the jury was Matt's testimony that this wasn't self-defense. Jason had been planning the murder of their mother for some time, and he discussed it with his brother more than once.
Jason is sentenced to 25 years in prison. Matthew takes a plea deal and serves 2 years in prison.
So because Matthew came forward with his attorney and told the truth, he was charged as an accessory, I believe.
Like the unpredictable finale of their favorite TV show, it's a twist no one saw coming.
Even though Tony could be violent, as a boss, he wouldn't allow himself to get in a situation where he would do time. He would sit while the hands and head were being decapitated and remove the guilt or the verdict of guilt from his name.
With Jason behind bars for at least 25 years because of Matthew's plea bargain, it looks like this family has a new boss.
In my opinion, Matt is the brother that story more closely resembles Tony Soprano. He was the one to walk out a free man.
Watching The Sopranos gave these brothers the strength that they needed to deal with their own problematic mother.
How does he get away with that?
And ultimately, it was the Sopranos that gave them the blueprint to commit a crime that Tony Soprano might have done himself.
The show was a huge success and watched by millions of viewers. And sadly, within those millions of viewers, there was one who thought that this might be a how-to commit murder and get away with it.
Like The Sopranos, Jason and Matthew's copycat crime has a questionable ending.
What stands out to me about this case is it's really difficult to paint a black and white villain. So many cases, you could say, that's the bad guy, that's the good guy. But here you have just a tragedy on every level.
If you enjoyed this episode of Copycat Killers, don't forget to subscribe at Podcast One or Apple Podcasts. Then go to Reels.com. That's Reelz.com for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including chilling reenactments and crime scene photos you'll only find on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at Reels.com. I'm Dr. J. Buzz von Ornsteiner.